ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 26, Text Number 27, Translation by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In this world, some persons are professional plunderers who set fire to others' houses or administer poison to them. Also, members of the royalty or government officials sometimes plunder mercantile men by forcing them to pay income tax and other methods. After death, such demons are put into the hell known as Saramayadana. On that planet, there are 720 dogs with teeth as strong as thunderbolts. Under the orders of the agents of Yamaraj, these dogs voraciously devour such sinful people. Purport. In the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that in this age of Kali, everyone will be extremely disturbed by three kinds of turbulations: scarcity of rain, famine, and heavy taxation by the government. Because human beings are becoming more and more sinful, there will be a scarcity of rain, and naturally no food grains will be produced. On the plea of relieving the suffering caused by the ensuing famine, the government will impose heavy taxes, especially on the wealthy mercantile community. In this verse, the members of such a government are described as dasyu, thieves. Their main activity will be to plunder the wealth of the people. Whether a highway robber or a government thief, such a man will be punished in his next life by being thrown into hell known as Saramayadana, where he will suffer greatly from the bites of ferocious dogs. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, in this chapter called The Hellish Planets, just as there are heavenly planets in this material world, this is Srimad Bhagavatam here is talking of the material world, not the absolute spiritual world. But in the spiritual world, there is no question of having any hellish planets, because there are nobody to punish in this manner. And certainly the dogs don't have teeth as strong as thunderbolts. Here is a case where we are seeing for ourselves right in front of our eyes what Vedvyasji has written more than 5,000 years ago is actually happening in many parts of the world. I've been to Africa last year, where I've seen country after country. I'm not talking about district after district. Country after country not having a drop of rain for years. And all the crops totally withered, gone long back. And the soil is eroded into powder. There's no need to use powder from any tin. You can just pick up powder from the earth, because the earth itself has become powder. So where is the question of growing anything there? And the people are wandering from one hole to another hole, looking for water or going hundreds of, and many people are dying. Animals are dying all over the place. We saw carcasses. And it is true that in that famine also, the government officials of that area were taxing the people. Now it's a ridiculous situation. Because how did the tax system start? Tax system started in England, and something came before that also in the Roman times, to finance wars. That is how the tax system started. And when the war was over, the tax was over. And there was always a question of one-third or some portion of the crops to be given to the government as dues. But nowadays, whether you are earning money or not earning money, there is always a tax. And this is the problem which will drive, according to my memory of the 12th canto, people will run away into hills and forests, if there is a forest left. And they run into the hills, away from these marauding thieves. The word used is dasyu, thieves. So we will see the today being the auspicious appearance day of Sita Devi, and also appearance day of Janava Mataji, disappearance day of Madhu Pandit. So we'll see how this situation where we are in now, and it will progressively get worse. It's obvious it will get worse. Somebody sent me on the internet yesterday, 2070, and it was a horrible situation. It was depicted by none other than the President of India, who is sitting there in New Delhi now. He has also possibly read all this, and he has given vividly in pictures and drawings and statements, and exactly this he has taken from the Bhagavatam, that there will be famine, no rains, and there will be problems of this heavy taxation. So what does one do? What do you do in such a situation? The only thing one can do is chant the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Associate with devotees. Come to a holy dham and associate with devotees, like here. Prabhupada's mercy is so infinite, I should say now, that he has provided in not only this world, I can see, but I'm sure that wherever Prabhupada has gone, he has established similar facilities for the suffering humanity. And one should read the Bhagavatam and the holy scriptures every day, eat prasadam, and have, if possible, deities in your own home, or at least a picture of the Lord, so that you can offer all your, whatever cooking you do, whatever you do, remember Krishna at all times. That is the most important, especially the last moment, which can come any time. So today I wanted to spend some time on, first we'll, about Madhu Pandit. There's not that much in the literature I could find. Maybe somebody can later on clarify a little more. But from Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela, 12th chapter, text number 88 through 90, I'll just read it out. Chakravarti Shivananda Sada Vrajavasi Mahashakha Madhye Teno Tenho Shruddha Vivasi. Shivananda Chakravarti, the 33rd branch, who always lived in Vrindavan with firm conviction, is considered an important branch of Gadadhar Pandit, purport by S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the Gaura Ganodesha Deepika 183, mentions that Shivananda Chakravarti was formerly Lavanga Manjari. I just want to clarify one thing. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. There is absolutely no doubt of that. It's a proven fact. And it is also a proven fact that he was none other than Krishna in the mood of Radharani. How is it proven? Because only the Supreme Personality of Godhead, according to Parasamundi, father of Vedvyasji, all the six opulences were exhibited in full, in unlimited way. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was unquestionably one of the most beautiful to look at. The beauty of Lord Chaitanya was such that anybody would, just by looking at him, accept that he must be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How so much beauty can come in one personality, you see. He had the strength of when the Rath Yatra time at Jagannath Puri, huge raths. Many of you have been to Jagannath Puri. And this rath was not moving. It was just stuck. Very often it happened. I remember the first time we had Rath Yatra in Bombay, the rath stopped right here at Chopati, at this junction, opposite Bhartidya Bhavan, just near here. And it was very difficult to get the rath started. I remember that. We had brought the rath from Shivaji Park. Of course, at that time, there was none, this temple was not even, it was in the mind of Prabhupada, obviously, but not, we were not, it was not manifested, in short. So we had started from Juhu. There was a committee and this and that. But the only committee which was missing is how to restart the rath. So we were stuck here. And then we thought, what to do? Shall we call a mechanic from nearby? Because we thought the wheel chakka had got fasaud or something. The Lord wouldn't move from here. And I think it was for nearly half an hour or something. At that time, I think he was alive. Yes, Jananda Prabhu. He came all the way from America to make our rath before he got cancer and he left this world. He used to make all the raths all over the world. Isn't it? You remember that name? No. Very famous personality. He was empowered by Prabhupada to make raths. And he made these beautiful raths. They had the top could go down and up and all that. And it was fascinating to Bombay people to see a rath going in the middle of the street. So that's another thing. The rath had stopped here. I remember that. And it didn't occur to us the significance of that. But in Jagannath Puri, when that rath had stopped, it stopped and stopped only. It didn't move only for days. So finally Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself came. Though so many elephants could not move the rath, wrestlers, big solid fellows, huge chaps, some of you might have seen them in outside, inside the temple, because they are from that community. They could not, I think there was 40 elephants could not move the rath. Do you remember Chaitanya Charitamrit? And more than 200 of those wrestlers could not move it. What happened? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just touched his forehead to the rath. That's all. And the rath started moving. Strength does not mean muscles. We are talking here of spiritual strength of the Lord. So there is no question of comparison between the material strength and spiritual strength of the Lord. Even the beauty of the Lord is purely spiritual beauty. There's no way we can compare with the beauty queen of India or something like that, or a Mr. So-and-so. It's a supreme spiritual beauty. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu unquestionably was the most learned, knowledgeable. He could defeat that Keshava Pandit who was that time Digvijay. All over India he had taken certificates from people whom he had defeated. He was defeated by Nimai Pandit. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that time appeared like a small boy. This is to humble him. Later on, of course, in his dream, he was a Saraswati Mataji's disciple, shall we say. He is Brihaspati actually. He actually, in one sense, he was in the spiritual world, and also I'll explain how this duplicate thing occurs here. And also Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was Brihaspati. So he had that quality of great knowledge. But Lord had supreme knowledge. Renunciation, everybody knows about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's renunciation. Unquestionably, the highest form of renunciation. Fame. We can see now every town and village in the world. Everyone, if anybody is showing a picture of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they'll say Hare Krishna. So it's automatic now. So we've covered beauty, knowledge, strength, fame, renunciation and wealth. Wealth is not money which you cannot take with you. Wealth is something which you can take with you. Spiritual wealth I am talking about. Lord is not concerned with material wealth. The spiritual wealth is in the account as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada gives in its purport that there are two types of bank accounts. One is a bank account of this world, like the one opposite side we got UCO Bank, Bank of Baroda, etc. What is use when you die? That bank account is gone to your relatives or somebody else or to the government maybe if it's not claimed. And the other bank account is your spiritual bank account. So that is also a long story. We can discuss at some other time. And one has to build up that spiritual bank account. But fortunately, in the spiritual bank account, there is no debit. It is purely credit. Even if you die, the next time you are born, you start, supposing you had 51 points in that, you start with 51 plus. So you go forward only. So Madhu Pandit was one of the Sakha Nirmaya, and there is a book of that name written by Yadunandan Das, where he says in no uncertain terms that Madhu Pandit, this famous devotee, lived near Khandadiya in the village known as Shani Bona Gram, about 2 miles east of Khandadha station. And most important thing is, he constructed the temple of Gopinathji in Vrindavan. So our Gopinathji here is, fortunately, we can see how opulently things are going on here. So we can make out that Krishna is coming here. How do you know that Krishna has come here? How do you know anybody has come to your house? As he is received, what is happening there? That is how you know whether that personality has come or not. So when opulence increases, or where things are, preaching increases, where more devotees are coming, more prasadam is there, you automatically know that there is the blessings of the superiors of the Imam Parampara. And that blessings comes and mercy comes to us here only because of Lord Krishna and the Guru Imam Parampara. There is a very great thing we have observed here. We started with, I was talking to a devotee this morning, that it was like, Hindi mein bolte khandan tha. There was nothing here. I told him that there were more rats than people in this place when we started, and more rat holes. So from that, it has reached this level by Krishna's mercy. So about Madhu Pandit, there is not too much written. He was one of those personalities who was a quiet, what we call backroom. He never came in the forward so much. He quietly did his sadhana and he built this wonderful temple, Gopinathji temple at Vrindavan. So that was a great contribution by him. Today also happens to be the appearance day of Sitaji. Now, of course, everybody has read or seen the serials of Ramayana and so on. But let us go to the root, mul. What had happened was that there was a very wonderful lady devotee, and her name was Vedavati. She was the daughter of Rajashri Kusandhwaja. And her father wanted her to marry Vishnu. That's a very tough demand. Father saying, you shall not marry anyone else and you shall marry only Vishnu. So she said, yes, very happy to marry Lord Vishnu. But for that you have to do penances. You have to do tremendous penances. So she was doing all these tremendous penances. And while she was doing these penances, Rakshas actually, he came on the scene. A young man, at that time Ravan was quite young. And he came, he had not started too much of his bad activity because he had just got the blessings of Lord Shiva. So he was still in a little bit of that mood. So he came to the lady and he got her out of her mood of penance and dhyan and whatnot, and asked her. Subsequently, Ravan used to just kidnap. He wouldn't ask any questions. But here he asked her, dear lady, who are you? Who is your father? What are you doing here? Why are you alone? All that sort of thing. So she answered truthfully that she was Vedavati and father was Kusundhwaj, and he had left this world. But unfortunately, at the fire where the father's body was cremated, the mother also jumped in. She got so emotionally attached. And that used to be a form of sati that was done at that time. So this lady was left alone. with this hope that one day Vishnu will be my husband. And she continued the penances. So when this Ravan said, look, Vishnu, Vishnu ko aayega nahi, forget about it. No Vishnu is going to come. I am here and you are coming with me and I like you very much and so on and so forth. And he said, you come with me to Lanka. So she said, certainly not. Who are you? So he explained, he's actually, that time he was not Ravan, sorry. His name was Dasagiri. That was the original name of that entity. So, Dasagriv said that there are various types of marriages. One of them is abducting and kidnapping. So, in my Rakshas community, that is a very standard form of marriage. We don't need any Brahmana and this sacrificial fire and all this sort of nonsense. That is for others. For us, this is the most important thing. So he started lifting her and taking her away and kidnapping. But this lady, due to a solid tapasya for all these decades, she ignited a fire by her mantras. And naturally, Ravan had to release her immediately. Because he wanted her, not the fire. So, so he just dumped her there and there. And she cursed him. She cursed Ravan. She said that I am coming back. She told Ravan. And I will be the cause of your death. I am coming back. I will be the cause of your death. And she went into the flames saying that she will not be born in the womb of any mother. Any human mother. Human mother. And she left this world. So Ravan said, it's a waste, I mean, wonderful lady gone. Chalo, theek hai, let me proceed. So Ravan continues with his awful activities in that northern part of India. And of course, there was a lot of things that happened. He went into various wars, including with his cousin brother, that is Kuber. His brother received him with open arms, happily. Receiving his brother, he said, no, don't receive me like this. I have come to loot you. And he took away his Pushpak Viman and did various atrocities there in his place. So Ravan had that tendency right from beginning. Now this same lady, Vedavati, true to her word, appears as Sita Devi. Now the word Sita itself in Sanskrit means furrow, F-U-R-R-O-W. What had happened was this, that Janak Raja, you all know he is one of the great Mahajans, he and his good wife, that is Sunayana, Queen Sunayana. So Janak Raja's wife is Queen Sunayana. So they were meditating all the time that we must have a child, we must have a child. And Janak's age was increasing, advancing. So one day, there was a system in those days that the king used to himself start the plowing of the field after the monsoon season. All of us, you know that when the monsoon starts, they start plowing the field. So he had gone with his golden plow, the king's plow. I've seen such a plow in one other place. And I've seen how they used to start in those days. In even small kingdoms they used to do in Gujarat. And there, to his great surprise, from the furrow from the earth, means not born from any lady womb, but from, of course, mother is also, earth is also a mother. Ganges, the rivers are also mother. Your nurse is also a mother, right? So, like that, this earth is a mother. So, he saw this beautiful child and he took it that this is mercy of the Lord. Of course, at that time, they were talking in terms of Vishnu. So, this is how Sita Devi appeared. And her name was given by Janak himself. Ah, Sita. Sita meaning furrow. means the line which is made by the plow. That is the Sanskrit meaning of Sita. And that is how she appeared. And this is the appearance day of Sita Devi. Of course, she grew into a very, very beautiful lady, surpassing everyone. But what had happened was a very interesting thing. You all remember many, many months ago we had in Srimad Bhagavatam about Daksha. So this Daksha gentleman, he had, humiliated his own son-in-law, that is Lord Shiva, by not inviting him at all. And then there was a war and all that, you know, this subject. Now, Lord Shiva eventually came to that site, but he had a huge bow and arrows. And his bow was very famous, heavy bow, very big bow. And that bow was given finally after that Daksha became an ass and all that, ash's head. Finally, he gave this bow to to the ascendant, means forefathers of Janak Raja. I think his name was Aranya. Anaranya. This Anaranya was the first recipient of Lord Shiva's bow. King Anaranya of Ayodhya. But he did not keep the bow there in Ayodhya. That bow went to Janak, actually. So he said, I'll take it to my place. That is at Janakpur. And there, this Janak took this vow that whoever strings this bow of Lord Shiva, he is only fit to marry this girl, my daughter, that is Sita. Now it was impossible. Ravan had also come. So many top class and all Yuddhas had gone there. Big, big Kshatriyas, everybody had been there, but nobody could even lift the bow. Forget about stringing the bow. Till Lord Ram came and Lakshman came. But in that assembly, Ram does not move at all. And Sita is so much keen to marry Ram, having met each other in the garden and all that. That happens these days also in perverted reflection. But anyway, so this Sita in her mind had already married Ram. But this gentleman was not even getting up from his seat. Now what to do? So she was getting palpitation that now I don't want to marry any of these fellows. But they are all failing. So actually Janak declared that if there is no one who can lift this bow and string it, Sita will remain maiden all her life, unmarried. He declared. In fact, he started saying that there seems to be no one and all that. At that point, Lakshman became very angry, as usual. And he said, what are you talking about? My brother is sitting here. And you think he said there is no Kshatriya left and all that sort of thing. So he instigated, you know. But Ram was still not moving. Though his brother was broadcasting his glories, which was good. But then, why was this? Because there was no permission from his guru. Vishwamitra was sitting there. Vishwamitra had brought him there for the purpose of this only. So Ram said, unless my guru instructs me, I'm not going to move. I'm not that, hell-bent on getting married. So, it's a wonderful English word, hell-bent. Brahmacharis enjoy that word. So, then what happened is, this lady, Sita, was moving she had the Varmala in her hand, but she didn't know what to do with it now. There's no work coming forward. So then Vishwamitra eventually, says to Ram, that Ram, you go ahead. So Ram does not go ahead. Still. So everybody is wondering what is happening now. So then Ram says, unless you bless me, I'm not going to go ahead. So then Vishwamitra blesses him. Ram touches his lotus feet. Then Ram very casually walks to that bow, looks at the bow,
Just
for him it's a bow. And he just touches it. And just to feel, it is hard and old. That's written there by Valmiki, that the bow appeared hard and old. I told you the history, right from Daksha's time. And then when Ram picked it up, everybody in the Sabha was shocked. That with just this, he was not so muscular and huge and voluminous, you know, in body mass ratio. And he just picked up the bow and just very playfully sort of strung it, you know. Of course, the happiest person was Sita. Janak jumped from his seat. At last, somebody here. My daughter is not going to be permanently at home only. So, he came immediately, told Sita, immediately now put the Paramatma, don't let go of this opportunity. The fellow has actually strung it very nicely. But in the process, the bow became, because it was stiff and old, it cracked. And there was a thunderous sound. So much so that it was traveling for miles around. And of course, as usual, something like this should happen. So who comes there? Anybody know? Huh? Parshuram comes. And Parshuram comes with his, you know, axe. Who has touched my spiritual master's bow and broken it? So, here is Sita Devi holding still that Varmala in her hand, and this Parshuram appears. So she is in further agony, you know, that she wanted to finish the job, you know, put the Varmala and get on with the marriage. But this gentleman walks in halfway, disturbing the thing. And he is furious, as usual. So, fury begets fury. So, who? Lakshman. So, it's there. Love begets love and fury begets fury. You get angry with someone, see what happens. That fellow will react. So, Lakshman, who is none other than Shesh, after all. You just touch a serpent and try. Don't try. But somebody who has tried knows that you should not touch a serpent. You should not touch, you know, just disturb anybody like that. Because they are bound to react. And Lakshman was furious. Because he asked, who has done this? So Lakshman said, my brother has done it. He was very happy and very... He said, I have to chop off his head just now. So Sita Devi had great palpitation, greater than before also. Just now, I found a husband. I'm about to accept him as my husband and this guy has come to chop off his head. So she was very, very upset, naturally. And this is all in Valmiki's Ramayana. It's in various other versions also, but in Valmiki Ramayana I'm referring to. And then what happened is a very interesting thing. A conversation takes place between Lakshman and Parshuram. But the conversation is very sarcastic on the part of Lakshman. So this Parshuram is getting more and more and more angry all the time. But because these two great acharyas were there, Vishwamitra was there, and what was the name? Sadananda was the acharya, the guru of Janak. So Sadananda acharya and Vishwamitra. So he says, because those two got up immediately to stop this, you know. So he says, because of you only, because they are also brahmanas, these are also brahmanas, so it's an internal matter. So they said, don't do this. Listen to us also before you chop off any more Kshatriya's heads. He said, of course, there's a lot of things he said that I have been, since a long time, I have taken a vow to kill all Kshatriyas. I have gone 21 times. Or how many times? You remember Govind Prabhu? How many times he had gone around the earth? 21 times, no? That's what I remember. Around the earth, killing all the Kshatriyas. So how is this impudent boy? Because he was a young boy, you know. So they were pleading that he's below 18, he's, you know, delinquent. So, and Lakshman was getting angrier. How dare you call me delinquent? Young, I've just killed so many. Rakshas is all over the place, myself and Ram. So who is this fellow to disturb the situation? Who allowed you in? He asked him. So you have no place here, you know, that sort of thing. Eventually Ram only gets up and he offers apologies. And Lakshman is very upset. Why is Ram offering apologies on my behalf? He said, no, you are a great Brahmana. And in our Ikshvaku's lineage, we respect Brahmanas a great deal. I will deal with my brother later on. But you accept my apology now and please, whatever you want, I'll wash your feet. But you can go now after that. So he said, no. Something has to be done about this. So Ram said, you take the remnants of this bow if you want. What else I can offer? If you are so attached to the bow, then take it by all means. Because he had nothing to do with it anymore. So this gentleman says, no, he was not satisfied with anything. He wanted to chop off both Ram's head and Lakshman's head. To the great horror of Sita. And at that moment, for the first time, Ram shows his anger. Not total anger, but a certain amount of what I would call, he wanted to bring discipline on this gentleman. And he then explains to him his duty. And so he, because an angry man does not understand anything, he is engulfed by a fire of anger. But only if the Lord himself, either as Paramatma within yourself or as Guru, who is the external manifestation, usually they only can quench a total anger. And with a certain amount of, I would say, sweet words, Ram pacified that gentleman and sent him away. Sita Devi then, as you know, goes. But what I was talking about, this Vedavati, she had entered into that fire. So Ravan never touched Sita. According to Kurma Puran, it is there in Chaitanya Charitamrita also. It was that Brahmana who was very upset. You all know the story, isn't it? So it was the Chaya Rupi Sita, means the others, not the real Sita. Because in those days, I'll give you another example. Viveshwan, the son Surya, demigod, he had a wife called, you remember, Usha. Now, Usha had twins, right? That is Yamunaji and Yamraj. And her, this Usha had a shadow. Can you imagine? Usha's shadow was called Chaya. And this lady, it was a lady actually. And the husband, the Surya, had these two wives. So his real wife, Usha, and her shadow was also his wife. And this Chaya had a son called Shani. That is this fellow who Ravan tied to his thing. So Shani, huh? You know, remember the story? There was one sister also of that Shani and one brother of that Shani. I remember that. But they were not of much relevance. So here is a story of Sita Devi right from her appearance and before her appearance as Vedavati, her appearance as at the time of this one, the plowing, the golden plow. And how she was, Ramayana speaks so highly about Sita in every way. For instance, I'll give you an example. When Ramchandraji decided to go to Vanvas, she was not allowed by Ram to come with him. He said, I am to go. You are not to go. Lakshman said, I have to go. He said, you don't have to go because I am the only one supposed to go. But then Sita said something like this, which Ram became a little surprised. And since then, he developed some respect for her also, too much. She said that if my father had known that you are such a person like a coward, can you not protect me in the jungle, then I should not have married you. Sometimes these women do that. So they say things like that. That really touched Ram, you know. And unfortunately, that only happened later on. So that is one of the reasons why Ram was more perturbed when Ravan took away that so-called Sita. Because she had already told at Ayodhya, right in the beginning, before they started their journey, that my father should not have got me married to you if you are not able to protect me. Once you are your wife, I have to follow you like a shadow. Wherever you go, whatever you do, I am supposed to assist you. I am supposed to go with you. And he was explaining, Ram was saying that we'll go in jungles, there'll be demons and this and that. She says, you are there to protect me. You are the husband. That's your job, duty. So in certain respects, Sita was very quiet and peaceful and very beautiful and everything else. But this also factor we should keep in mind, that how other ladies talk. This is a thing which Sita was not just a dumb doll, you know. She was very, very smart. So, as this is American slang, that she was very, very intelligent. So, actually, there is a whole sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya. Hanuman is the first disciple of Sita in that sampradaya. So, she's an acharya. Now, we'll talk of another acharya. So, today is also the appearance day of Janava Mataji. So let's see what is the constitutional position of Janava Mataji. So we finished about Sita Mataji. Janava Mataji appeared as the wife of Lord Nityananda. As you know, Lord Nityananda is none other than Balram. So Lord Balram had two wives. So both of them were sisters, actually. In those days, it was very common, about 5,000 years ago. Like the perverted reflection of that is, who? This fellow, Kans. Kans also married two sisters. The Ambika, what is that? Jarasandh of Bihar, daughter. So, their emphasis is on Bihar. So, even now we've got Jarasandhs in Bihar. So, the position is, that because there's coming in that parampara, no? So, this, she is Revati Devi, and her sister was Varuni Devi. That is why Balramji was very fond of Varuni. So, now, because obviously, he was married to Varuni. Varuni Devi. But there are, Varuni has two meanings. One is Lika, and the other is his own wife's name was Varuni for some reason. And then what happened was, and they were daughters of Maharaj Kadumdmi in Krishna Leela. And in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, the same Maharaj, what is it? Kakumadni. I don't know, I've never heard that name before. But anyway, I had to do some research to find out who was the father of Revati Mataji. So the Surya Das was the father of Janava Devi. Now, she was such a great, the word uses Acharyani. Achar Rani. This is the exact words used. That time. And she started her career, really speaking, by assisting in book distribution. Did you know this? She was the one who actually convinced Jiva Goswami that if you keep these books all in Vrindavan, then who will benefit? It should go to the mass. These books should be distributed throughout Bengal and Orissa. And it was her instruction that Jiva Goswami followed. And Jiva Goswami called Shyamananda and this Narottam and Srinivas and told them to take these books to. So this was to Bengal. So she was the root cause of it. Okay. She herself had, this is one very wonderful thing in all this search I found. This is called Lady Northcote Hindu Orphanage. And she was running lady, Janava, Chaitanya orphanage. Because she had adopted orphan. Do you know this? This fellow's name, this orphan's name also we found out. This orphan was called Balram. And then he was initiated by her only. So she was initiating a lot of people. It's not that ladies today are in ISKCON, you know, some people have commented wrongly, of course, that why Prabhupada allowed ladies to take Brahman initiation and so on. Here is a case where they've gone beyond Brahman initiation. They were giving initiation. So ladies in those days, that is Janava Mataji, it's not only Janava Mataji. There was another lady also who was giving initiation. I'll come to that later. So Janava Mataji assisted these people in making sure that all the books, that is why we have these books with us. Otherwise, without Janava Mataji, we would not have, that's what's written here by her biographer, that today we would be, there would be no BBT and all that. If Janava Mataji had not insisted on Jiva Goswami to propagate these books and publish and see that more and more books are distributed. So she is the origin of the BBT. She is also the origin of LNHO because she started the orphanage. And she took one orphan whose later on she initiated, she gave the name Nityanand Dasa, obviously, because her husband's name was Nityanand. She gave his name Nityanand Dasa. She also had a son of her own, I think. I'm just trying to... Birabhadra. So she had two issues. One her own and one she adopted. Now the other very important thing about her was she went to Vrindavan, as I told you, to meet Jiva Goswami. And she also met Loknath Goswami at that time. And told him what to do about his favorite disciple. Who is his favorite disciple? Narottam Das. So, actually, if we analyze carefully, she has been instrumental in changing the lives of so many people. She also said that they should travel. Otherwise, these Goswamis were staying in Vrindavan only. They were not traveling so much. Means they were in the Vrajbhumi. Vraj Mandal. So in that sense, she is the traveling party. Aap log jate hain, tabhi you should namaskar Janava Mataji. Because she said that book should go from village to village, town to town. So that was the reason why these people took that bullock cart and started moving. Okay. So she was the first one to do that actually. And give this idea that we should travel with the bullock cart, with the vehicles. This is very important. Then what happened is that when Narottam returned, that Narottam Das Thakur returned to Kheturi, of course the biography uses the word Narottam only, but we should not say that. We should say Narottam Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur. He went to Kheturi, one letter was waiting for him from his Diksha Guru, Loknath Goswami. And that letter said that we must install DTs. And deity worship should be started by you everywhere. Radha Krishna deities. So this, he took it, Narottam Das Thakur was very serious. So whatever his Guru Maharaj had instructed, he would take it to his heart immediately. So he immediately thought and he sent invitations all over to all the senior Vaishnavas, irrespective of which, there were about five groups by then. What were the groups? It's also mentioned here in the purport. And this was Janava Mataji's greatness, that all these group of people were collected by her into one camp. There were camps called Gaudiya Sampradaya was split into five. Then she reunited all these five. That was a very great contribution by her. Firstly, there was... Gaura Nagari Bhav, then Rasaraj Bhav, then there was Gaura Param Yavad, then there was Nitya Paramayavad. Paramayad means ultimate Godhead. And Advaita Paramayad. So these five, all the Vaishnavas were broken into five groups. And they were sort of saying, mine is greater, that nonsense was going on. So she's nothing doing. She had that authority. She was accepted as the supreme guru. It's very interesting that at that stage, the senior most Acharyani Rani was this lady. Because all the other senior devotees had disappeared from this earth. So she was the one who could control this crowd, you see, motley crowd, and get them all together under one banner of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And how she did it was fantastic, because she knew the Shastras so well and she was so patient. She made them understand the Shastras. She made them understand Chaitanya Charitamrita. And finally, after many days, she could convince all of them to accept leadership of Lord Chaitanya only as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even at that time, there was some sort of difference of opinions which had to be ironed out. And she did it. This is the greatness of Janava Devi. Now, Narottam Das Thakur had five sets of Radha Krishna deities, and that famous gold Gaudita, I think you people went, no, there to East Bengal, what is it called? Bangladesh. And you have seen the... Now in India. Murshidabad. But it was at that time in Kheturi, in East Bengal. So you have seen that. So he installed actually. And the fact is that it was Janava Mataji who put the garlands on the deities, made the garlands, presented on the deities first time they were installed, and those same garlands were then distributed by her only to Srinivas, Narottam Das Thakur, and our Shamanand Pandit. So her contribution is immense.
With these kind of words. And after he spoke these words, then he went to pacify the relatives of Hiranyaksha. And if we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the kind of message, the Tattva Gyan which he is speaking to the relatives of Hiranyaksha who are suffering the death of Hiranyaksha. If you remove Hiranyakashipu Uvacha from those verses, it appears to be like a full-fledged Gita course which we have. With examples and anecdotes, he is speaking about the Tattva Gyan, the Atma Gyan, path of self-realization. And Prabhupada explains, similarly, the commentators of Kali Yuga, Hiranyakashipu used the sword to kill Vishnu. And the commentators who write bogus commentaries on the scriptures in this age of Kali Yuga, they are using their pen by writing bogus commentaries, and therefore we say pen is mightier than sword. So they are using the pen to kill Vishnu, as Hiranyakashipu was planning to use his sword to kill Lord Vishnu. And then when Hiranyakashipu pacified the relatives of Hiranyaksha, then Narasimha Puran explains that one day Hiranyakashipu was sitting in his palace and he was still not out of that anger against Lord Vishnu. And as he was sitting in his palace, thinking that what else can I do now? What should be my next step? At that point of time, Narad Muni walked in the palace of Hiranyakashipu. And we know Narad Muni, he has the, you know, he's very timely in these past times. That what is the time when he has to enter and just trigger off? And he's like kind of a transcendental agitator. He triggers off the pastimes, you know, from second gear to fourth gear immediately. So Narad Muni walked in, and Narad Muni, as is his natural habit, he was performing kirtan as he walked in. He was singing Radhika Raman Aiti Name. And Hiranyakashipu, upon hearing Now Narad Muni is a person, he is allowed everywhere. He can enter into Hiranyakashipu's palace, he can go to Vaikuntha, he can go